Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Chaye Sarah. This week, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy discusses Chaye Sarah. Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Admissions. And now, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. Sarah's death, the purchase of Ma'aretz HaMach, the cave of Machpelah, and her burial at the beginning of this week's Parsha seemingly prompts Avraham to undertake one last project, which is the marriage of his son, Yitzchak. And this is actually, it's one of the longest, most detailed stories in the whole of the Torah. Let me read you a few verses in English. Abraham was now old, advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said to the senior servant of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, "Put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to the land of my birth and get a wife for my son Isaac." Now, Avraham's request poses for me a boatload of challenges. In addition to the fact that Yitzchak is not apparently worthy of choosing, worthy or able to choose a wife for himself, Abraham sends his servant, why does Abraham send his servant back to his homeland? And what's wrong exactly with the daughters of the Canaanites with whom he dwells? So the Rashbam points out, he thinks you would have thought right away that there's something wrong with Yitzchak or Avraham, that he can't find anyone local. And that's why the Rashbam points out that that's why the Torah emphasizes the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So that you can know that there were multiple options around him. He did not need a mail order bride. He could have picked someone from around him. And so you might have thought, because he specifies the Canaanites, he doesn't want a Canaanite, that that he's really anxious about a Avodah Zarah, about idol worship. And clearly it's true that the Canaanites are definitely idol worshippers. But so are the folks back home in Aram Naharaim. They're also idol worshippers. And Avraham has managed to find people that he's willing to make a covenant here in Canaan, in Aner and Eshkol. So perhaps he could have picked someone from amongst the good guys in the place where he lives, and yet he's not really willing to. He's willing to make military covenants, but not marriage covenants. I want to begin by just getting rid of the obvious answer, because I think people think Avraham wanted a family member. But if you think that Avraham wanted to marry a cousin, the problem is he doesn't say that. What they say in Hebrew, ha'ikar chaser min sefer. It's missing from the text should have said. Even though at the end of last week's parsha, Abraham actually was told that Milcah and Nahor have children, Avraham decidedly does not mention the requirement that the servant, which the Midrash identifies him as Eliezer, choose a wife from amongst his relatives. He says explicitly, El artzi ve'el muladati telech. Go to my homeland and my birthplace, which is not, he does not mention that he wants a relative. And some of his parshanim have tried to interpret it that way, that moladati means kindred, but it doesn't seem like Eliezer understands it that way. After all, Eliezer goes to Aram Naharaim, the city of Nahor, but he doesn't make any effort to look for Avraham's kin. He just davens simply. This is what he says. Eliezer, when he's looking, he says, O Lord, God of my master Abraham, grant me good fortune this day and deal graciously with my master Abraham. Here I stand from the spring as the daughters of the townspeople come out to draw water. Let the maiden to whom I say, please lower your jar that I may drink, and who replies, drink and I will also water your camels, let her be the one for whom you've decreed, for your servant Isaac. Thereby I'll know that you've dealt graciously with my master. So Eliezer doesn't stipulate that the person should be a relative. And it does happen that a relative comes out, but Bethuel does emerge and is the first person to help. But this is apparently not really significant to Eliezer, because when Eliezer, after Rivka does what she needs to do and passes the test successfully. First, Eliezer says, wow, when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold nose ring weighing half a shekel and two bands for her arms and 10 shekels in weight. Those are some pretty significant gifts. And then after he gives her the gifts, he says, pray, tell me, he said, whose daughter are you? Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? So it wasn't a condition for him that it be a family member. It just happens to work out that way. You were probably saying as you're listening that, but wait a minute, when he tells the story over to Laban and Betuel later in verse 38 and 47, he tells everything in a totally different order, where there he first asks who you are and only after gives the jewelry. But we can easily explain the fact that, that when Eliezer tells over the story, he says, first I asked who you are, because he wants to pay honor to Betuel, and Laban, and make them think, he wants to flatter them into thinking that he only wanted family members, even though that just happens to be a coincidence. That's how most of the Mefarshim understand it. And that, I kind of think that's a sweet little sub-message, which is that it's okay to lie, to exaggerate a little bit and make white lies for the sake of peace. And that's for sure something we can learn, but I don't think it's an indication of Abraham's original intention. So what I think we've established so far is that it's not about relatives. It's not about idol worship. And it's not about lack of options. So why on earth does he have to schlep all the way to the place where Abraham's a total unknown in order to find a bride? Abraham doesn't answer that question for us, but Eliezer, as Avraham's trusted servant, doesn't seem to be bothered. He seems to have a plan, and he knows exactly how to go for a proper shidduch. He does it not by examining yichus or family relations, but actually focusing on actions. How does Rivka behave? Some of Farshim make a point of connecting Rivka's characteristics to those of Sarah, Yitzchak's mother, as a way of explaining how Rivka can fill Sarah's place for Yitzchak, right? In verse 67, in chapter 24, it says, Isaac brought her, after they meet, Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, and he took Rebecca as his wife. Isaac loved her and thus found comfort after his mother's death. And from here, the Mefarshim and the Midrash make a lot of showing how Rivka is the direct inheritor of Sarah's legacy, indeed her very physical void, and lives in the very same tent. Rashi, quoting the Midrash, says, Yivieha ha'ohela Sarah imo, v'naset dugmat Sarah imo. That is to say, because the language should use the language of compound language. He brought her into Ohel Sarah, but it says Ha'ohela Sarah Imo. He brings her into the tent, Sarah Imo. So it seems as though, Rashi says, he brings her into the tent and then she becomes Sarah Imo. She is Sarah Imo, his mother. And then the Midrash explains why. Because all of the time Sarah was living a light had been burning in the tent from one Shabbat to the next, and there was always a blessing in the dough, meaning the dough grew, was very big, and there was a cloud of divine protection which was always hanging over the tent. But since her death, all of these had stopped. However, when Rebecca came, they reappeared. So there is this sense that Rivka is really filling, very literally, the void of Sarah. She's taking over Sarah's legacy. The things that were empty and missing when Sarah was gone have been fulfilled. Radak makes a similar comment. He explains that Yitzchak saw in her all the good things and the modesty that his mother had, and this was the source of his love. The Baal Datz Mikra goes so far as to say that Eliezer's test is actually a direct translation of the eulogies that are not cited word for word in chapter 23, as we might have liked to, but we can understand what was in those eulogies for Sarah based on the way that Rivka behaves, and he thinks that the parsha's name, the life of Sarah, should be better translated, Sarah lives on, right? Sarah's living on in Rivka. So there's a set of mafarshim who are of commentators who are trying to understand that Eliezer chooses Sarah because, chooses Rivka because she's a substitute for Sarah. But there's another midrash, and it's amplified very much by some other commentaries and beautifully amplified by my genius colleague, Judy Klitzner, in her great book, Subversive Sequels, that really Rebecca's actions more evoke Avraham's actions than they evoke Sarah's actions. As you know, the rabbis, both in the Midrash and the Zohar, identify Abraham's primary characteristic as chesed. He's identified as the guy of chesed. And this is most prominently displayed by Abraham in Genesis, in the 18th chapter of Genesis, where Abraham welcomes in the stranger, hosts the visitor. And there he does it with tremendous passion, using the key words running and speed. He sees them and he comes running and he hastens to the tent of Sarah and he says, quick, 3 seahs of choice flour, knead and make cakes. And then Abraham, ran to the herd, took a calf, tender and choice, and gave it to the servant boy who hastened to prepare it. It's a feast beyond expectations that he gives to these strangers who are turn out to be angels, but were dressed as Arabs. And he does it with the keywords speed, running around, and maher, as fast as he possibly can. And when Rivka receives Eliezer, the reception there evokes those very same keywords, the same passion and the very same passion of going beyond the letter of the Lord, letter of the law, excuse me. In verse 18, she says, drink, my Lord, she said. And she quickly lowered her jar upon her hand and let him drink. And then she goes really beyond expectations because when she said, then she says, it says, when she had let him drink his fill, she said, I will draw for your camels until they finish drinking. Quickly emptying her jar into the trough, she ran back to the well to draw, and she drew for all his camels. So the key words run and quickly are again echoing very much the story of Avraham and his chesed. Rivka is echoing that same chesed. And similarly, she's going well beyond expectations. She provides good service, not just quick and outstanding, but also where, just like Avraham provided a 3-course dinner, so too Rivka doesn't just draw for the camels as Eliezer has prayed, but she even draws for the camels until they're finished. And as is well known, camels can go for a long period without drinking. And when they do get water, they, you know, drink like a camel. So according to the great and authoritative Wikipedia, a 600-kilogram camel can drink 200 liters, that's 53 gallons of water, in 3 minutes. So you can imagine Rivka, Eliezer, it says, has 10 camels. So 10 times 53, wow. Okay, I'm exhausted just thinking about it. It's a little bit much. Rabbeinu Bachaya says this really can't be done without a little bit of siyat dishmaya, a little bit of divine intervention, because that's quite a lot of drawing of water. No wonder Eliezer immediately pulls out the jewelry and begins the betrothal process. So the echo of the words maher and rots in the same context of extreme hospitality clearly evoke Avraham rather than Sarah. And once we're making that connection to Abraham, we can easily begin to identify other important connections. The first connection is that I've wondered, or many commentators have wondered, why does Eliezer propose a test for Rivka? It seems to, for some of the commentators, are bothered because it smacks a little bit of sorcery or nichush. Like, why do you need a sign? Why can't you just look for someone with chesed? And it seems almost magical. But once you make the connection to Avraham, we understand exactly why. Because Avraham is someone who passes test after test. It says in Pirkei Avot, chapter 5, Mishnah 3, that he passed 10 tests. So that's a classic characteristic of Avraham that Sarah, that Rivka is also sharing. And we see, and perhaps this also explains later, when Lavan, in verse 50, says, first he says, the matter's decreed by the Lord. We can't speak to you bad or good, right? We don't have really any choice. Obviously, it's pure destiny that Rivka should marry Yitzchak. But, I mean, chapter 24, 50. It's clear that they're destined for each other. And yet, the next morning, Rivka's family doesn't wish to part with her quickly. And Lavan says, let's ask the girl. Now, I don't know if there's anywhere else in the Torah where we actually ask the girl what she wants. Right? Why are they asking the girl what she wants? I'd like to suggest that this, too, is another test. And interestingly, she passes. And when Abraham passed his hardest test, which was the binding of Isaac, God blessed him. I will surely bless you, and I will multiply your seed like the stars in the heavens, and like the sea, the sand on the shore of the river. Vayarash zarecha et shar oivav, and your enemy and your seed shall inherit the gates of your enemies. And so too, when Rivka passes her test, she's blessed with language that clearly is meant to echo Abraham's blessing. Yivarchu et Rivka, v'yomru la achotenu at, hei la alfei revava, v'yirash zarech et shar sonav. You should multiply greatly, and your seed shall inherit the gates of their enemies. So we've demonstrated the way that Rivka has inherited Sarah's legacy, but even more so, Rivka proves her status as Abraham's inheritor through three characteristics that were not even requested by Abraham: the family relationship, the passion for chesed, and her uncanny ability to pass tests. And I think that actually sets the direction for answering my initial question. Why does Avraham insist on sending Eliezer all the way to Aram Naharaim, back to Artsi ve'el Muladati, to his land and his birthplace, if he's not looking for a relative? To make sure, the answer I would like to suggest is to make sure that he gets someone of vision and courage. Throughout the ages, the commentators of Midrashim have puzzled over why, seemingly out of the clear blue sky, Avraham is told, Lech lecha mi'artzecha mi'maladetcha mi'beit avicha ela aretz asher areka. Avraham, go from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's house, to the land that I will show you. Obviously, it's one of his tests that he passes successfully. The Sfat Emet suggests that there's actually a voice calling out all the time to everyone, go out from your land to the place I will call, to the place that I'll show you. But only Avraham has two things that you need. One, the ability to hear that voice, and two, the ability to act on it, the courage to heed that voice. The Midrash, in one of the famous Midrashim that are trying to answer this question, why is Avraham chosen? It speaks about Avraham seeing a vision of a burning castle. And he has the vision, Avraham in that story has the vision and the ability to see, well, there must be some reason, some meaning, some owner to that building that's directing actions. So Avraham's characterized by this ability to see and by a willingness to heed that call. You see this again in the Akedah, right? Where first of all, he's willing to heed the call. And second of all, he specifically talk about Har HaMoriah, the temple mount, the site of the Akedah as the place where, the mount of the Lord, there is vision. That Avraham is able to see this place and have vision. And so we see this also about Rivka, that she seems to have the power of perception and the courage to act on it. We see it first here in her willingness to go. Elech, she says, when she's asked, should I go? She goes, just like Avraham. She's willing to leave her entire family on very short notice and to travel to a mysterious but perhaps spiritually promising future. And next week, we'll see her vision and courage again in the context of her willingness to make sure that Yaakov gets the blessings at very high risk to herself. So Rivka carries on Avraham's legacy in family relations, in connection to chesed, in the ability to pass tests, and in a willingness to journey, and in an ability to see what needs to be done. I say that not to suggest that Yitzchak isn't also an inheritor of Avraham's mission, quite the opposite. In next week's parsha, in Parshat Toldot, it says, "Ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham who led Yitzchak, Yitzchak's life. These are the generations of Yitzchak. He's the son of Avraham. Avraham bore him." So Yitzchak is in his entirety defined by Abraham. Chapter 26 is all about how Ma'aseh Avot Siman Banim, the deeds of the fathers, is a foreshadowing of what the children will do. And you see that in the case of Yitzchak, where the promises are reaffirmed to Abraham, where Yitzchak says, just like Abraham says, she's my sister, where Yitzchak redigs the wells of Avraham. But it's this inheritance, actually, it's exactly this inheritance which prevents him from being able to really fulfill Abraham's mission. Because Yitzchak's old money now, meaning he's born wealthy. He's born into this legacy. And so he can no longer be a self-made man. The studies of self-made man have shown how very complex it is actually to hand down. When you make something yourself, it's very much yours. And then when you hand it down to your children, it's not easy to hand down that same passion to your children. And so with all of Yitzchak's greatness, what could be more opposite than choosing a path for yourself and a willingness to be sacrificed for your father's path, right? Yitzchak, what characterizes him is his willingness to die for his father, not his willingness to go out on his own. So Yitzchak accepts and receives and continues faithfully the tradition. And this is defined by the Torah says specifically, he may not leave the land of Israel. So Rivka completes that part of Yitzchak that's lost, that completes that part of Avraham's tradition that's lost to Yitzchak, because Yitzchak has this wonderful legacy of having been raised in Avraham's home. So the deep echoes of Avraham and Sarah tell us a lot, to summarize. Of course, part of it is about gender. What excites me is the characteristics of chesed and bravery and vision and leadership and the ability to endure challenges, which are so beautiful in Avraham, are things that don't have to be handed down along gender lines. Avraham, it goes from Avraham to Rivka. And that makes me excited. But that's not the only thing that gets me excited. The other thing that gets me excited is the power of partnership and inheritance. We, of course, want to bequeath our heritage to our children. But at the same time, we don't want to rob them of the magic that comes with discovering your own path yourself through hard work and risk. So for this, Avraham insists that Yitzchak should have a wife that has vision and courage, as well as chesed and yichas, right? She can complete Yitzchak in self-discovery and bravery and courage in ways that Yitzchak can't possibly do, because he's come in to Avraham's tradition as an inheritance. And so my prayer for all of us is that we should be so blessed with characteristics shared by Rivka and Avraham, chesed, endurance, vision, and courage, and also with the ability to find a partner who can fulfill the inevitable gaps that we have and allow us to become complete together. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hammer Kassoy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.